You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
The story in our passage today is in all three Synoptic Gospels, Mark, Matthew, and Luke. But a careful reading reveals some big differences in each. Mark's version, the earliest, is the longest and is mainly a vehicle for Mark to pit Jesus against the Pharisees. Matthew shortens it and changes the characters up to have a Pharisee asking the question to show up a Sadducee. It's basically the religious equivalent of a Democrat and a Republican. Luke then edits it even more to the point that Jesus doesn't even speak the answer. A lawyer asks Jesus what the greatest commandment is, and Jesus, typical, asks a question back. What do you think? The lawyer, not Jesus, answers the question. While all these inconsistencies might be problematic to literalists, if you look closely, you can see that they all have one thing in common. They all agree that when talking about the greatest commandment, our charge as people of faith is to love your neighbor as yourself.
Our words of wisdom are from Mark 12, verses 28 through 31. One of the scribes came near and heard them disputing with one another, and seeing that he answered them well, he asked him, "Which commandment is the first of all?" Jesus answered, "The first is, 'Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength.' The second is this, 'You shall love your neighbor as yourself.' There is no other commandment greater than these." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
A few years ago, Phoenix was in the path of a not quite total solar eclipse. My kid's school went into hyper-liability mode and was on lockdown from 9 a.m. to noon, so there was absolutely no chance of any kids burning out their eyeballs by looking directly at the eclipse. But they also said, if you want to stay home that morning and watch the eclipse, it'll be an excused absence. Maddie was all over it. "Oh, Daddy, 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 please let us stay home. It only happens once every 1,000 years. So I got up my telescope and we set it all up to project the image of the eclipse on a piece of poster board, and it was pretty cool. We got to be all sciencey and had a good time. And here's the deal. We were able to make plans ahead of time because astronomers have learned to predict these things. However, in ancient days, an eclipse was more often than not a surprise and not a welcome one. Some ancient cultures thought the sun was being swallowed by a dragon or otherwise extinguished forever. It's said that on one occasion, warriors took it upon themselves to fire flaming arrows at the sun to try and reignite it, thus setting their own village on fire. Whoops. Let's be honest. Things seem pretty dark these days, too. From white supremacists marching in Charlottesville to Muslim bans to the separation of children from their families at the border to the killing of countless unarmed black people by the police to shootings in churches and synagogues and mosques to the pandemic. It seems like the last few years have been one seemingly unhinged event after another. And as crisis follows crisis, people have in their own ways been kind of running around like medieval villagers, convinced that the sun has been swallowed up for good. But let me offer this observation. No matter how dark it may seem, as people of faith, we have certain touchstones, call them certainties, to hold on to. I read about a Baptist pastor from Georgia reminding his congregation that Genesis 1 says that All people are made in the image of God. Genesis 4 teaches that we are our brother's keepers, and when human blood is shed, it cries out from the ground to God. Genesis 9 says that there must be an accounting whenever human beings harm or kill each other. And from that rather blunt proclamation, we jump to our passage today, where Jesus is quoting his own Jewish tradition. We are to love our neighbors as ourselves. One of my spiritual mentors, Rabbi Rami Shapiro, points out that a lot of people get this passage wrong. They quote it as, love your neighbor as you love yourself. No! People say, well, I have to work on loving myself before I can love my neighbor. No, that's not what the text says. It says, love your neighbor as yourself, not as you love yourself, as yourself, as though they are a part of you, integrated, connected, and one with one another. This means all our neighbors, without regard to race, color, religion, sexual orientation, national origin. As Paul taught, enmities, strife, jealousy, anger, quarrels, dissension, and factions are among the attitudes and actions that are in opposition to the kingdom of God. In the face of all that, Christians throughout history have been a powerful force for human equality, for compassion, justice, love, and belief in the sacredness of every human life. We're called to do no less today. But we've also been a force for the dehumanization and mistreatment of others. Christian civilization and the Christian faith has often been distorted by an unholy religious, racial, civilizational pride. Christian settlers were raised to believe that they were, by God's design, superior to other peoples, such as Africans or Native Americans, and others too, including Jews, who were the object of a long-standing hatred. In the name of Jesus, our forebears subjugated, enslaved, and often killed these others, free to believe and act on the belief that those who were not like them or us were inferior human beings. If you're interested in a column that I wrote back in 2014 on canceling the honors we pay to the corrupt sex trafficking, slave trading, murdering, sketchy navigator we know as Columbus, you can find the link right below. Our tradition is deeply marred by thousands of years of conquering in Jesus' name, and it behooves us to be a part of those who seek to repudiate this ideology in the name of a different vision of equality, of justice, and respect for all, for a multiracial society in which all are valued equally. And it won't be easy. As we're finding out, many instances of white supremacy, racism, and hatred go unreported or underreported in many places. People are becoming more conscious of just how big our challenge is. Do you remember who Dietrich Bonhoeffer was? He was a Lutheran pastor in Germany who helped organize what was called the Confessing Church that opposed the Nazis. He helped Jews. He was a pacifist who participated in plans to assassinate Hitler. Near the end of the war, the Nazis arrested him and executed him. Back in 2006, a lot of us were reacquainting ourselves with Bonhoeffer on the occasion of his 100th birthday. Jeff and I were sitting at breakfast discussing what Bonhoeffer quotes we should post online. I wanted to post his most famous quote, paraphrased, "Nazis suck," and other classics. Well, a few minutes later, Jeff was at the cash register and was confronted by a very agitated older white gentleman who had overheard our conversation. He said loudly, "Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a communist and he deserved what he got." Wow, Jeff kind of backed away, said that he didn't agree, and wished him a good day, and we got out of there. Now, that kind of thing has always happened in our communities, churches, business schools, organizations, and families all across the nation, every day. It just seems that they're getting to be more blatant of late. It used to be that the white upper middle class bubble that many of us live in protected us. We just didn't see it. We didn't believe it. But it is happening more and more out in the open. It's like a deep gash in the soul of our country and culture. And every time I hear it or see it, I'm reminded that if anyone is going to say something, it's us. It's you and me. What kind of people is the Spirit calling us to be? Martin Niemöller was another prominent Protestant pastor who emerged as an outspoken public foe of Adolf Hitler. For his troubles, he spent the last 7 years of Nazi rule in concentration camps. Today, on the wall of his cell at the Sachsenhausen concentration camp is the quote that he is most known for. "First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I wasn't a socialist. And they came for the trade unionists, and I didn't speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak." In the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu's book, The Book of Joy, Archbishop Tutu contrasts optimism and hope. He says, when we watch the news, we must keep a broader, more holistic view. Yes, this or that terrible thing has happened. No doubt there are very negative things, but at the same time, there are many more positive things happening in our world. The news and social media tend not to report on those things. We've got to have a sense of proportion and a wider perspective. Then we will not feel despair when we see these sad things. Hope, the Archbishop points out, is quite different from optimism, which is more superficial and liable to become pessimism when the circumstances change. Hope is something much deeper. Tutu says, "I say to people that I am not an optimist because that, in a sense, is something that depends on feelings more than the actual reality. We feel optimistic or we feel pessimistic. Now, hope is different in that it is based not on the ephemerality of feelings, but on the firm ground conviction. Hope is nurtured by relationship in community, whether that community is the literal one or one we fashion from the long memory of human striving, whose membership includes Sojourner Truth, Gandhi, King, Mandela, and countless others. Despair turns us inward. Hope turns us into the arms of others, even if those arms are socially distanced these days. So I'm thinking a good stream of thought for today would be, we choose love. At the Fountains, we've made it clear for years that we believe that racism in all its forms, individual and systemic, is wrong, and that as followers of Jesus, we stand for the biblical values of equality, justice, and respect for all. When Jesus said we need to love our neighbors as ourselves, as part of who we are, we believe he actually meant it. We're interconnected with one another. We made that clear when we voted to become a reconciling community, publicly affirming and welcoming our LGBTQ brothers and sisters. We made that clear when we resisted the smear campaign from other churches claiming that we were fiction, where one pastor even went so far as to say the Fountains was like a virus that needed to be wiped out. We've pulled together and participated in any number of events over the years, like the We Are One Vigil after Charlottesville and the Racial Equity Challenge that we're in the middle of right now. For years, we partnered with Congregation Beth Hagivot, welcoming our Jewish brothers and sisters. We've hosted Buddhist meditation classes and have sponsored literally dozens of interfaith events as part of the Fountain's witness to equality among the faiths as one of our core values. But as every day's news confirms, our work is far from over. I'm reminded that when Tempe's Temple Emmanuel recently inquired of several Tempe churches if they could use their facilities for High Holy Days, they were told flat out that it would be blasphemous to have people of another faith worship in their sanctuary. Fortunately, their next call was to Dayspring United Methodist, where they were welcomed with open arms. Let me be clear. Churches that reject Judaism as a legitimate religion, which sadly is most churches, and disrespect Jews as somehow not as good as Christians, are part of the problem. They allow space for anti-Semitism to grow and thrive. You may have been caught up in it yourself just by virtue of having grown up in a middle-class, white Christian home. If you somehow think that Christianity is cosmically superior to Judaism and quote John 14:6 at me, I'm happy to diagnose you with a chronic theological problem and would be happy to sit down with you and work out a treatment plan to get you over your anti-Semitism. But let there be no doubt, you have a problem. Likewise, churches and people who reject Islam as a legitimate religion and disrespect Muslims have a problem. Some of you know that Maddie has got me stuck on the social media app TikTok. I am totally enamored of the DIY and cooking feeds, and let's not even get started on my infatuation with Tabitha Brown. But there is a sinister side of TikTok. Case in point are triumphalist Christian influencers like David Latting, who has nearly a million followers and whose TikToks have more than 3 million views. He's part of a long-standing tradition of fundamentalists who, with tears in their eyes, assures you that he doesn't hate you. He's telling you you're burning in hell because he loves you so much. Let me show it to you.
I'm sorry, bro, but no. No, not even close. See, Muhammad is dead and Jesus is very much alive. I've called out your religion once and I'm sorry, but I'm gonna have to do it again. Islam is a lie. And by the way, not all religions have the same goal. I'm coming to you out of love because I truly believe Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven. The only way. Christianity does not line up with any other religion like that. We only believe the only truth is Jesus Christ. Sorry, bro. I love you, though. But sorry.
Sorry, bro. I love you. But sorry. You're burning in hell. Oh, good grief. This kind of thing is insidious. A social media influencer who casually damns nearly 2 billion people, 25% of the world's population, and doesn't face any consequences because most people just blow him off. But I need to remind you, he's got nearly a million followers. Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself, but this kid makes it really hard to do. This is hate speech, plain and simple. But because of our country's robust commitment to freedom of speech, it's allowed to flourish. So we have work to do. In talking with many of you and sensing the kind of zeitgeist out there, it seems that this whole year has been one giant slow-motion eclipse where the light of values that we thought were unquestioned or compromised, overshadowed, or outright blotted out. Our challenge is to not panic, to not run around like frightened villagers witnessing a cosmic disaster. My hope is that we as a church and each of us as individuals will not give in to the temptation to curse the darkness, but will take action to continue to be a beacon of the kind of inclusive love that Jesus has taught us, welcoming all and respecting all. In this crazy time of social distancing and frazzled nerves, it's even harder. I get it, but be assured that we make the extra effort to stay calm and stay the course, that the darkness will pass and will become stronger for having endured the ordeal. We won't be spooked by the temporary darkness that sweeps over us like an eclipse. We're smarter than that. We know better than to panic. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. often used the phrase, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." But that's not actually completely original to him. He paraphrased a more nuanced thought from another one of my theological heroes, Theodore Parker, an influential 19th century Boston transcendentalist and minister in the Unitarian Church. Parker said, "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but a little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. And from what I see, I am sure it bends towards justice." Michael Denzel Smith wrote, "King's single sentence is a more tightly wound rhetorical punch, easily deployed for immediate inspiration, but it carries the unintended effect of suggesting that justice is inevitable, so that no matter what we do now, the arc of the moral universe will care for us later." Parker's sermon, however, forces us into a more active role. A more active role. It's not just going to happen by itself. And it's certainly not going to happen if we're running around in a panic. Don't let the temporary darkness scare you. Don't let despair turn you inward. Let determination to put love first strengthen you. Let hope send you into the arms of others. After all, those others are just an extension of you. Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no greater commandment. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.